I am here with our first associate, other than myself, at Leading Edge Financial Planning, here on Real Wealth Podcast, which is sponsored by Leading Edge Financial Planning. Lennon Zilke was a career software and electrical engineer with Viavi and decided to make a career change. So our story actually starts with Lyndon introducing himself to me about 3 years ago now. And he was a Dave Ramsey certified coach. He had passed his CFP exam after self-studying all by himself. No sponsoring firm, anything like that. Just decided to go for it. He was passionate about personal finance and planning and wanted to help other people. And we put up a section on our website to say, we're hiring. And from that, Lyndon called me, and a couple conversations later, and me trying to talk him out of it a bit, he made the very sobering announcement to me that he was going to get up and go quit his job of 35 years. So I just want to welcome Lyndon onto our podcast this morning and get to talk a little bit about what that career change looked like, how life was for him during that period of time, and learn a few things about thinking through a career change. So welcome, Lyndon.
It's good to be here.
And I'm so glad you're here. And you've been with the team here,
too.
Coming up on 3 years?
Coming up on 3 in April.
Yeah. You got your CFP officially conferred to you about a year ago. Is that right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well deserved. So let's talk about your career change. What, you know, you're with Viavi for, it wasn't Viavi for all 35 years, but.
Right. We'll call it Viavi.
Yeah. And yeah, so after 35 years of working there, when did you know it was the right time to make a career change?
Well, I'll start a little bit earlier. About 7 years ago, I was really burned out with the job already then. So I started here 3, but really it goes back 7. And I was really, really tired of what I was doing and talking to my wife about it. And she said, well, what do you want to do then? And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to jump out of the, as they go, the proverbial frying pan into the fire without knowing what I'm going to do. Just by chance, once I was talking to a guy, I was asking what he was doing. He said he was a CFP. And I was like, oh, he kind of told me a little bit about what he did. And I said, well, that's what I want to do. Okay, that's 7 years ago. It took me a couple years of thinking about it. I'm not a quick decision maker, and which is probably sometimes good and sometimes not. But then about 5 years ago, one day I just said, you know, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I know it's difficult because there's a big process to go through to be a CFP, as you know. But I thought, I'm just going to sign up to go to school and become a certified financial planner, because first thing is you got to take classes for a year. And at the same time, I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to do this Dave Ramsey thing, too. So at the same time, I was going through and becoming a certified Dave Ramsey coach and taking classes to become a certified financial planner. So I was really busy for a little bit over a year. I studied anywhere from 2 to 4 hours every day, 7 days a week, up till I passed my exam. So, you know, answering the question, when did I decide it was right? That was over a 2-year process of saying, I don't think I can do this. This looks too hard. There's too many unknowns. I need to know everything, have everything planned out before I can make the jump. But finally, I decided, you know what? I'm never going to know for sure. I'm just going to do it. So by the time I quit my job 3 years ago, I'd already been through 4 years of thinking about it. So it was an easy thing to do. I wasn't scared at all. I was just 100% ready to quit what I had been doing, because, like I said, I was burned out 7 years ago. So by 3 years ago, I was definitely done doing that.
Yeah, I remember you were thrilled when you made that announcement and got up and walked out. And I was a little terrified. Yeah. Because we were going from just me as a producer with the firm in its infancy And we were a couple of years in, I guess, but still, to be responsible for another producer and make that, you know, doubling of advisors, that was a big deal for us, for me.
Well, another thing that happened during that 4 years, I guess, of transition for me is both of our boys went through college or finished college. We paid off our house. We had no debt. So there wasn't a big financial, I wasn't scared financially of not making, you know, basically any money. Going from what was really a good income at Viavi, I was a manager there, product line manager, and they were paying me good. And so I knew I was gonna leave a good income behind, but I was also gonna leave a job behind that I just had really come to hate.
So talk about that, because there are philosophies with the job that you hold. On, you know, you go to work and you get paid for it because it's work. Can you speak to how your thinking has changed over the years with that?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest way it has probably changed is, although we need an income from our job, we need to live, there are times when you can't change jobs. Maybe you have a large amount of debt, or it's going to create quite a bit of uncertainty and as to whether or not you can pay bills. That's one thing. But I think your work should be fulfilling. And I've heard that poo-pooed a lot. You know, it's like, well, you know, work, they call it work for a reason. On the other hand, I really believe that it's possible to have a job that really fills you and doesn't empty you every day, which is the way the job was for me for probably the first 30 years anyway, of those 35. I loved it. I loved what I did during that time. So I think what has probably changed for me is that you can do what you're passionate about. And that doesn't mean you're not going to be able to make a living doing it also.
Yeah, we all have our giftings and that'll build and change and morph over the course of our life. And, you know, sometimes your work culture does too. Might shift from what it used to be right out from under you, and then you got to still keep doing your thing. But, and from our previous conversations, maybe that happened a little bit at work.
Yeah. Over the 30 years, we went from a small company that was a lot of fun to work at. But, I mean, work isn't just about having fun. I mean, I was passionate about it. I was excited about it. I was excited to go to work. And, you know, I woke up thinking about the day and not dreading it. I went from that to thinking about the day and dreading it and maybe even feeling almost a little bit sick on a Sunday night knowing, time to start another week. And I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to that Sunday night kind of blues that comes over you when you realize I got a whole nother week to go through. And that's where the thank God it's Friday came from.
Mm.
I don't think too many people say thank God it's Monday, but I'm pretty close to it right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. And that's an awesome place to be when, you know, especially if you know that you don't have to show up. You know, you guys have been very diligent, and it's nice when you don't have to show up to earn the money. You're doing it because it's fulfilling, and you want to be there for the people that you serve and go do more of it. Yeah. So, anyways, I'm happy for you with that. Do you think you could have, we've talked about this before, when do you think the earliest you actually would have had the option on the table to leave your job and make the career change? Was it sooner than what happened, or?
Yeah, I think that probably as soon as our boys graduated from college and we weren't helping them out anymore, we suddenly did have a lot more income at that point, or disposable income. I think at that point would have been maybe the right time to have made the change. Certainly paying our house off, which came soon after, really only 2 or 3 months after the boys graduated from college, would have been a good time to do it. But I think for the most part, we don't really know. And I didn't even really know until I got here.
Right.
And part of what we do here, what I try to do here for people, is help them figure out how much money they need to live for the rest of their life. Not focus on how much money can I have someday, like when I die, like that's going to do you any good. But do I have enough for the rest of my life? If I could have had a financial planner that was life-centered, like we are here, I think they would have told me probably a couple years earlier that I would have been able to change careers at that point, and without any fear of running out of money at that point. I mean, I realize not everybody is in that position, but I think that you've heard of the golden handcuffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where the job you're in is going to pay more than anything else that you could do. And so that makes it hard to change to something else, because you know you're going to take a cut in pay. Until you take your eye off pay and instead have your eye on the life aspect of it, then it can become very easy to do. And even though I didn't know that when I came here yet, within a year, I did know, and I was like, hey, I could have done this a lot earlier.
Right, yeah. So if you had a guide that was helping you to focus on what do you really need, not what are you giving up?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's easy to fall into, well, I'm giving all this up. But if we can come to terms with, no, here's what you need, here's what you're actually going to live on, and the rest of it's going to be left over when you're dead.
Right.
You actually aren't giving anything up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a yeah. Which is a fun reality to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's very fulfilling. But in that period of time where life was difficult, actually, I'll read this. I got this from a friend this morning. The quote is from Streams in the Desert devotional. It is sorrow that opens up within us the capacities of the heavenly life, and it is sorrow that makes us willing to launch our capacities on a boundless sea of service for God and our fellows. So it is with many souls who indolently live on the outer edge of their own natures until great thunderstorms of sorrow reveal hidden depths within that were never hitherto suspected. So some bigger words than I know what they mean, but
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't, but you know.
for whatever it's worth, there are periods of life that are difficult that open us up to new growth. And so I don't want to totally say we need to live a life without any troubles. Because I think those difficult seasons grow us in ways that we wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think that, you know, you probably, if you had another Lyndon guiding you earlier, you probably would have made the shift a little sooner.
Yeah. But I am glad, or I'm, I think maybe thankful is the word, for what did happen. And by that I mean, we can talk about maybe I could have done it earlier, but I'm glad it happened when it did, in the way that it did. And I can certainly see God's hand in it, you know, guiding me to where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always two sides to it, right? I'm
absolutely
glad what happened is what transpired, you know, is what happened, and it's been good for me. But on the other hand, if I can help other people get out of a job that is draining them, they're burned out in earlier, I really want to do that for them too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's that side of it where once we process through it, we figure it out, and we go through that grief process in a positive way, we can help others through theirs.
Mm, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that redeeming aspect. So now that you're in a fulfilling, exciting career, how would you describe what that's like and how that's different? Not that you weren't ever before, but right. how would you describe fulfilling today? What's that mean to you?
Well, part of what it means is, I mean, you look at the word fulfilled. It's kind of a strange word, full and filled. I mean, who put that word together, right? As opposed to at the end of the day being drained and wishing it was Friday. Not that I don't enjoy my weekends still. I don't want anybody to think that I don't enjoy free time or whatever, but
we're watching the Chiefs.
Well, maybe for doing aspects of the job that I like the best. I don't know. That might be what my weekends are, right? But it fills you instead of drains you. So as you go home each day, you don't need a recovery period to start again the next day. You're full. You're filled.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite parts of this career is the victory stories at the end of the day. You know, be like, man, you know, I was with a client and we had a big breakthrough and, you know, here's what it looked like and it was really beautiful. And yeah, I mean, those are awesome days and we're privileged to be a part of that. How would you say the career change has affected your life at home?
Well, I have a story about that too.
Okay.
Studying for a CFP, taking the coursework and then studying for the exam, it's very hard. And you're constantly doubting yourself. And then you hear how few people pass the exam the first time. So having someone that encouraged me through the whole thing, Julie would always put these little post-it notes. They'd show up different places in my office with encouraging words for me. That, I think, brought us closer and was extremely helpful. I have all of them still. They're in a folder. I've kept them. But secondly, my last job, I'd travel a lot. So I was gone quite a bit. And now I'm home all the time. And so that's good too.
Except when you travel to go fly fishing.
There's that, yeah. You know, I've been doing that for about almost 35 years also. So I think she's used to it by now. She lets me go still anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Quite the woman you got there to let you out to go fly fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I started doing it even when our kids were little. So I'm sure that was difficult.
So how's the temperature changed at home, though, between you and Julie? Because it has changed, right?
Well, another thing that happened during this is we started doing what we call life-centered financial planning, which kind of changed both of our perspective on money. Actually, more on how it relates to life. So, again, just like anybody, when I first did our financial plan, I looked at it as it was a better financial plan if there was more money left at the end. Which that means there's more money left over when you're dead. One day, as I was kind of making the transition to more of a life-centered type financial plan, I thought, you know, I've been telling Julie that she needs to wait as long as she can to retire. And we went from that to looking at it. I was like, you know, if she retired today, we'd still be okay. So I went back to her and said, you know, you can retire whenever the time is right for you, which is coming up here soon. She's going to retire at the end of this school year.
That's awesome.
So that'll make both of our lives better, actually.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting how we tend to look at problems or view something a certain way, and it's a problem through one lens. But if we change the total focus, the perspective change, all of a sudden it changes the whole scenario where, you know, a couple years ago you were stuck in your job that you at that time had grown not to like. And Julie was probably, you know, gutting it out at work to some extent as well. And within the next few months, she'll be retired and you're in a career that you love, doing it at the pace that you prefer. And you guys are able to experience life in a powerful way because of that shift of perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And we had a dog a year ago.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, what's a dog have to do with life-centered financial planning? Well, just throw out the financial part first and just think life-centered. What do you want to do with the time you have left? We do have a saying around here, life's not a rehearsal. We didn't make it up, but we like to use it as our own anyway.
Right.
That just means that you go through life once. You're not rehearsing for your next time through life. So you need to decide ahead of time, what do you want to do with the time you have left?
Mm-hmm.
If it's working till you can't work anymore, that's fine if that's what you're wanting to do. And the other side of that is what are you able to do? And that's where the financial planning side of the life-centered comes into. What are your options? And the best kind of financial planning produces options for you.
Absolutely. We've got so many options in front of us at any given day.
Mm-hmm.
We all have the freedom to live the life we want, but it may not be with all the assumptions we hold about what that looks like. And it's good to have somebody that can help us think differently about it and come at it with a fresh set of eyes. And I had a client in here, and it turned into a bit of a joke because they wanted to go as fast as they could on the salt flats. And I'm like, okay, how long have you wanted to do that? All my life. how much do you think that's going to cost? Let's shoot high. What do you think it'd cost to do that? Oh, probably $25,000. Like, okay, let's put that in your financial plan. We put it in there. It just was a little bink,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Nothing. You know, where 30 years ago, yeah, that would have been a significant expense, frivolous possibly at the time. And today, it's inconsequential. But, you know, so I don't know if that person is still going to follow through with that or not.
Yeah,
but
now it's the option.
We even started playing around with, you know, like, let's find a jet-powered car and what's that going to cost?
Yeah.
And can you afford that? And that was kind of fun.
And hey, if it's not an option, then at least you know.
Right.
Like if somebody comes in here and says, you know, I want to go into outer space. Okay, let's see if that's possible or not.
Yeah.
I don't know what it costs right now, but I know that
those tickets are pricey.
It's pretty high.
Yeah.
And it's a few years out. You might have to wait a while.
Yeah.
But hey, we can put that into the plan and see what it does to it. If it zeroes it out like in 1 year, then, you know, maybe it's not a good idea.
Might not be worth it. Maybe it is, though.
Yeah.
You commented on a post on LinkedIn that I saw of this financial planner who saved up, what, 20,000?
20,000, yeah.
Yeah, 20,000 bucks to take he and his wife down to Antarctica.
Yeah.
And he said, don't skimp on the Dramamine in that article, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
But rather than use it on a down payment on a home, they spent it for the experience of going to Antarctica. And the perspective shift there, I think, is great because, you know, can they go make enough money? Of course they can to be personally or totally financially okay. But when they're grandparents and he's telling his grandkids, oh, this time I went to Antarctica, you know, I don't know if you remember stories growing up that you heard 20 million times and you could easily recant the entire story word for word. But those are the level of experiences that have a lifetime impact that are totally worth it. That it's good to know when you can't afford it or what it's going to take to get there. And interestingly, that also reminds me of how investing in experiences is seemingly a non-durable investment. However, when you look at the level of joy that somebody derives from investing in experiences like that with people that you care about, those last much longer than any possessions we can buy.
Yeah, they also don't require you to rent a storage unit.
That's right. Yep, no storage, no maintenance.
I've heard people say, you know, at some point, what you spend your money on goes from things to experiences. You know, that is certainly true. You know, it's not about buying things mm-hmm. that are going to just take up space and you'll sell them at a garage sale or whatever. But it's about having experiences with those you love, with your friends and family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you guys were talking about buying another house.
Yeah.
Out in the country and, you know, and then you settled on a back patio just right. recently.
Yeah. A lot of that has to do with, I guess we again started looking at, well, let me back up a little bit because I do have a story on that too.
Okay.
My wife had seen a house that she's like, she was looking at a picture of it and it's like, would we be able to buy this house? And I just said, no, without really knowing whether or not we could. And so after a while, I could kind of feel that she wasn't really happy with that answer because it's like, well, what is it we can't afford? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know what? I really don't know. I thought to myself. And so I went back using our financial planning software we had. I was like, okay, what can we afford? So that told me, you know, actually a dollar amount that we could start looking in. And so we did look for a while and decided that maybe moving to out into the country at our age maybe wasn't the best idea. It's going to be a lot more work and so on. So yeah, we did. I don't know if you call this settling on building a new deck, but it's a covered deck on the back of our house.
Settling on is not the best choice of...
not the best choice, probably.
Yeah, of words.
But again, we made the decision based on what we're wanting to do with the rest of our life. But also bracketed in by, is it something that is going to impact our finances in a way that are going to make it so we can enjoy it? So I think it really comes down to that. If there's a certain car you want, I've always wanted to drive, you know, fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at some point, you know, it's like, well, why not? You know, let's look and see what that does to your plan. Or, you know, if I want to go to Antarctica, which is never going to happen. it's more, there's a lot of places I'd go before Antarctica. But there's nothing wrong with looking at it and seeing how it's going to affect your plan. Another aspect to that is I think some people, especially after they retire, they think I don't have an income, so I really can't be as generous anymore with the money that I have.
Right.
And often the opposite is true. You might be surprised at how much of your money that you can give away to things you're passionate about, things you'd like to help more with over the rest of your lifetime.
Yeah.
You might find out that, hey, we can give away a lot more money than we thought we could and still have plenty to have a good life. In fact, it's probably going to be a better life because sometimes the best thing you can do with your money is give it away.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the most freeing things you can do. One of the best ways, if you think that you don't have enough money, I mean, there is a point where maybe, you know, if you're... accounts are all negative. That's not good.
No,
but for most people who are able to pay their bills,
yeah.
who think that they don't have enough money, try giving some away and start there because that will break your mindset of that scarcity mindset of your own money, of what's available, of, you know. But yeah, it's easy to get caught up. Who was talking about that? It was a sermon on, I think even this last Sunday at I go to Pathway and they were preaching about money and how it kind of gets sticky. You know, you ramp your lifestyle up and then all of a sudden you don't have enough money and you make more and you need more and you make more and you need more and this spiral of insecurity when you're seeking security in the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of security is never going to come from the money.
Mm-hmm. I like what one thing Dave Ramsey says about that is a clenched fist is the international symbol of anger. And when you're holding on tightly to your money, it can cause anger. And the open hand, on the other hand, is like, hey, come here, you know.
Even a dog understands
even
that.
Even a dog understands that. That's right.
Absolutely. How do you think you've grown personally in the last few years?
I think that we do think a lot about money around here.
We do.
We have to. That's our job.
It is.
But we also, as it turns out, we think a lot about life around here. That has caused Julie and I, my wife and I, to think a lot more about life. And that's not a bad thing, including to think about our own mortality, the fact that we're not going to live forever here on Earth. Those two things together, the planning side for money and thinking more about life in general, has made my life better. I think that there's a lot of things we don't want to think about, that we put off thinking about anyway. And hopefully when I do planning with people, they start to think about some of those things. I don't shy away from telling people that, hey, you know where this all ends, right? With you in a box. Or at least your body.
Right.
I draw a picture of it even. They usually maybe laugh just a little bit. I don't put their name on it, but yeah, that's where things end here. So the question is, what do you want to do with the time you have left? And I can't ask other people that without asking myself, without asking Julie and I, what do we want to do with the time we have left? And hopefully that is bringing out what's most important for us.
Yeah, I mean, our mission statement here is we help people make wise financial decisions. And you can't do that without realizing we have limited time here. I had a great friend pass away Sunday morning. He was, I think, about 84 when he passed, but he lived a good life. And he left a wife. He left her financially. She's fine, and she's got a great network of friends around her. But it is sobering to know that we don't know when our time is up. And it is good for us to make the most of the time that we have.
Yeah, even though we don't know, I think it helps to, well, with a financial plan, we usually put an end date in there, which is always, sometimes it brings up some comments, especially if I have one of them dying before the other, because they're, you know, maybe they both die at 90 and they're a couple years apart.
Yeah.
Whether or not they don't die the same year, in the plan anyway. And we know that things don't go according to plan, but on the other hand, to number our days it's biblical, for one thing. I think it helps us think about our mortality.
Yeah, I've got some stories from another client. They had a dad that acquired a lot of money, and he, When it got close to when he passed, I believe he had some regrets over working as hard as he did for as long as he did and missing out on the life side with his family. Yeah, I think that's a life-giving thing to help clients realize that there's a lot more to planning and investing than money. Money's just a tool. It's just here to help us do the things we want to do and live the life we want to live, not the other way around. We don't. When you start serving money, you're the slave.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a terrible master.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and kind of getting back to your comments on, sometimes we wind up enslaving ourselves to a job that we don't like because we've got to make that level of money to pay off the amount of debt and bills that we have. But once you live more debt-free and you lower that required outflow, then your options really open up to live in the type of life you want to live. And it is a paradox, because sometimes if you think that spending that money is living the life you want to live, you realize you may limit your options a lot more than you thought if you do it too soon. So what do you think the next 10 years might hold for you, Lyndon?
I think that I'll be here for the next 10 years. Is that, if that's good news or bad news?
Not in a pine box.
No,
I mean, like,
right, yeah.
Like just career-wise.
Just career-wise, yeah.
You're not just saying that because I'm here.
No,
right?
No.
Of course not.
It's to look ahead 10 years. I think it helps to look back 10 years. So 10 years ago doesn't seem like that long ago, really, for me anymore. Certainly the second half of your life, you might say it's like, you know, the second week of a vacation or whatever, it goes by a lot faster. I don't know why that is. It's still 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I think the next 10 years will go by incredibly fast. And I don't want to waste that time because I figure based on just hereditary that I probably have 18 good years left. And I have a lot of longevity in my family in terms of being able to do whatever I want to a certain extent. You know, that's what I feel like the time we have left. So I want to make the most of that. And especially the next 10 years. Really part of that is I want to help as many people as I can also have the best life possible with the money they have, you know. It's not about telling them they need to work and earn as much as they can. It's about having the best life possible with the money you have.
What lessons would you hope to impart to anybody else that is either in a job or career that they've grown less than happy with, and or you know, they're just kind of considering pursuing a calling they felt that they've had, even though they're in a job that they're maybe okay with? What lessons would you like to impart to anybody who's thinking about a career change?
I think that probably one thing is to start to do some planning. Now, I don't say that just because I'm a financial planner, but I do say that now because I do know help is available. That didn't even cross my mind. I didn't even know 7 years ago when I was burned out, I didn't even know there were people that did this kind of work, really. I knew there was, you know, brokers and people that help you invest or whatever. But to actually help, you know, if I'd have known there was help out there where, hey, I can go see people, they can help walk me through what my options are financially, how much longer do I need to go working this job, or, you know, do I need to work any longer at all? On top of that, you know, seeing a financial planner that has a life focus and isn't just going to try and sell you something. Maybe do a financial plan, but just try and sell you something. I'd run away from those kind of people. So make sure you're aware that that's out there also. Yeah, if I would have known that help was available, I think I would have sought it out 7-8 years ago.
Okay, but I'm going to push back on that
a little bit.
The Lyndon of 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. Okay, yeah. I'm an engineer, and engineers think that they're smarter than everybody else,
no,
including all the other engineers.
No, they know that they're smarter.
Now that I'm not an engineer, I know it's not true. We always think even what the other engineers do is... Well, especially software engineers, they always look down on everybody else's code that they've written. But having said that, I wish that I would have understood the side of it that isn't purely financial. You can't put it in a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. Right. There you go.
No matter how many tabs you have.
We need to put that on the wall somewhere. That's a perfect quote for an engineer. Yeah, that's good. You can't put life-centered planning in an Excel spreadsheet, no matter how many tabs you have.
Yep.
That's perfect. Quote of the day. I love it. And I think even sometimes you still fight that. I think we both, or everybody in this industry, probably still fights some of that mindset that's there of, you know, what do you have that I can't do for myself? But even between you and I, it's helpful as we bat things back and forth, as we consider, you know, how do we do this thing called life well, to the best that we can with what we've got. And the problem everybody has is we can't see ourselves as the problem very often. We have to get to a pretty sometimes distraught place to see ourselves as the problem, maybe. You know what I mean? So going back to that quote I read earlier on, you know, being in a place of sorrow, sometimes that breaks us down, but it is hard to make that shift of, it takes a lot of energy, in fact, to be able to see if we can see ourselves as the problem of being in our own way, because we're never objective about ourselves. We're always looking from the inside out, and it does help to have somebody that's looking from the outside in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can take a step back and look at yourself, that is helpful. It's even more helpful to have somebody else do that for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Objectivity has a value that is difficult to nail down, because you never know what you're missing out on when you are missing out on it. You're just flat blind to it.
You just don't see. That's why they call it blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
If we could see our own blind spots, they wouldn't be blind spots.
That's right. That's right. It's great to have somebody in your world that can help reveal that to you. And I've appreciated having you here, and you add a lot to our team, and you know, especially with your Excel charts, that adds a lot too. Yeah. You have some really incredible Excel skills, but beyond the spreadsheet, you bring a lot to the firm, and I've appreciated having you here, and I'm just grateful I get to interview you on how your life has changed and the things you've learned, and hopefully allow for a path for others to make a similar life-giving change into their career, their next career. Well, I suppose that is a wrap for today. And thank you so much, Lennon, our resident software and electrical engineer, certified financial planner, jack of all things Excel, and then some.
Yep. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And if somebody wants to work with you, how do they do that? How do they get a hold of you?
Of course, they can call me, 316-535-0750, or email me, Lyndon, LYNDON, @ leadingedgefp.com.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thanks for coming on Real Wealth Podcast. And until next time, thanks for listening.